think part of it is this theoretical approach to time horizons changing. We don't suddenly realize that we're mortal one day. You know, from the time we're in late childhood, we realize that we're not going to go on forever. And increasingly, those time horizons become more constricted as we get older. But it's not stepwise. It's a continuous kind of a process. And I think certainly biological aging, same thing. It's a continuous process. It's not stepwise. But we tend to talk about aging as if it is. Socio-emotional selectivity theory has a constellation of empirically supported observations, and it's a explanatory account of how they might intersect. And so the work that I've tried to do is to take on those intersections. So experimentally, if we change people's time horizons in the laboratory, do their preferences change in the laboratory? So there was a lot of that kind of work we did early on just to show that it was time horizons and not age. And once we had separated time, future time expectations from chronological age, I think a lot of, for me, that's when the work got exciting, because it started to say it's not age. Because almost every age difference, and I think this continues to be largely true, that we observe differences between people who are 20 and people who are 40, and we say, it's decrement. Somehow we say it's got to be a deficit in the 40-year-old. So we've got this implicit model that the 20-year-old college student mind is the ideal, and anything that deviates from that must reflect deficits. Does it have to always be loss that instigates? Why? And children, if they go from doing things one way to doing things another way, we don't say, it's because they couldn't do it that way anymore. But we always make that assumption. And I don't mean to be Pollyanna and to say nothing goes wrong with age. There's a lot that goes wrong with age. But to say that's what aging is, you know, from 50 plus or 25 plus, it's all about loss and compensating for loss. Never made sense to me. It just doesn't make logical sense. And so trying to find other ways mechanisms other than age that might be associated with age was something that was important. It was Mara Mather and Susan Charles. So the three of us were here at the time and did the first work on the positivity effect. And basically the rationale there is if with age and time horizon shifts, people come to place greater priority and value on emotional meaning. And given that goals direct attention and cognitive processing, if we see systematic shifts in goals, would we see systematic shifts in cognitive processing? Those were the conversations we were having, and that's what started the first study and has since led to, you know, a whole industry of studies on the positivity effect, which has now been widely replicated in lots of different contexts. But the finding is that relatively older people process positive stimuli and remember positive information more so than negative information compared to younger people. So that's the finding. You know, if you're walking across campus and you're looking for a friend, you may walk right by the coolest bird that's ever been in a tree out there in the middle of the quad. And if you're looking for that bird, you will walk right by your friend. So, you know, brains don't operate like computers taking in all information evenly. It's goal-directed, right? And so we're thinking this is goal-directed. So it's top-down. It's not like people got sad and now I need to look at something positive to make me happy. It's that what's important to us drives what we see.